This is the Skilding Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Skilding Podcast. We believe that true deep learning occurs when three things happen. You must 1, understand, 2, remember, and 3, deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast covers the first part, understand. Complete this learning by getting the second and third part at skilding.com. So together, let's get the key takeaways from this book understood. In this episode of the podcast, we talk to Ben Balazzi, who read a book called 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote to Chaos by Jordan Peterson. Now, Jordan Peterson is a divisive figure, I'm aware of that. But I was interested to know what this book is about and why it became a bestseller. And the truth is, there is no sugarcoating these 12 rules. They are, some of them will apply to you, some of them won't. But there is real truth in what's in this book. So let's get into it with Ben Balazzi. This is The 12 Rules for Life by Jordan Peterson. All right then, so Ben, welcome to the podcast. We are going to be talking about the 12 Rules of Life by Jordan Peterson. John, before we get into the actual 12 rules, give us like the general overview of the book and why you wanted to cover this one. What is it about this book that you like?
Yeah, well, thanks a million for having me on today, Kevin. I really appreciate it. So the book is kind of about anyone who's kind of trying to dabble in the idea of improving themselves. I mean, especially in today's world, everyone's kind of trying to find out, oh, what's the key for life? I mean, there's no set definition of how to go through life. I mean,
yeah,
it can be very complicated at times, and situations arise, and I suppose no one has all the answers, but I think this book is a good antidote for that. And kind of, I mean, I suppose everyone kind of knows these rules in their own head, but to actually read about it and try and implemented into your own life has really enhanced and grown me as a person. I mean,
I was just going to say that one of the things I think about with like just looking at the actual 12 rules, it looks to me like it's a good way in to almost putting edges on, like you're saying, like everybody kind of knows these rules of how you should go about, you know, living a good life, but I think maybe sometimes when people, when someone like Jordan Peterson writes it down, it's easier to kind of follow and go, yeah, that makes sense. I've said this actually in the last podcast. That's probably 3 podcasts I think I've recorded, so people listening will be sick of hearing this. But I always say about these kinds of things, whether it's, what do you call it, soft skills or rules for life or behavioral skills, whatever you call it, generally the way it works is that when we're teaching them to somebody or when we're explaining them to somebody, we almost always have to kind of break them down into individual rules or individual little sections. But in the real world, they all kind of wash on top of each other, and you're kind of doing all of these things at the same time, or using 3 rules over here and 4 rules for this part of your life and doing all sorts of things. So I think it's useful for people to hear these things broken down into their constituent parts, and then you kind of put it together out in the real world.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, like, once you read about them, you kind of associate with scenarios that you've already implemented into your own life. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, we do these things on a daily basis, and it's just trying to kind of improve upon them, I suppose, and just be more aware of them. So I suppose we get into it, will we?
Go for it, Jack. Give us the first rule for, actually, what is it? Is it the rules for life? Is it just like how to live a good life, how to improve your life, or
how to live a responsible life? I mean, like, we're always going to be confronted by conflict and chaos throughout life, and it's just a natural part of life. And we're just human beings at the end of the day. So I think 12 Rules for Life, An Antidote for Chaos by Jordan B. Peterson.
This sounds like we're dragging it out now, but just one other thing.
No problem.
Jordan Peterson is a bit of a controversial figure.
A divisive character,
you could say. What do you think of him? Were you a fan anyway, or did you think, I'll read it and see what he's like? Or,
to be honest, I'm a big fan, and my girlfriend, to be honest, doesn't really like him. And I kind of, before Christmas, she actually got me this book for Christmas, and I was always kind of saying, He's great. Like, I personally, most of his audience would be particularly male. I think he's great. I mean, I can understand some people's, they don't really like him. I think he's great, and he's definitely helped me as grow as a person. So that's something, you know, that can't be taken away from him. If he improves people's lives, you know, why is he such a divisive character? Do you know
what I mean? I think he's divisive for a couple of reasons. One, he does not sugarcoat anything. He doesn't care whether people agree with him or not. And also, he doesn't have much of a sense of humor. He's a very serious, dour kind of character. Like, he doesn't smile much and doesn't back down, like, or doesn't play the game sometimes, I think. So I think if people actually get behind his the way he looks, maybe, or the way he sounds, and kind of listens to what he says, sometimes
his demeanor,
yeah, that's the word. If you can get behind his demeanor, you can kind of listen to. Anyway, I this is one of the reasons I wanted to do this book as well, is that I think there's a lot to be gotten from this. So anyway, go ahead. Rule number one.
So stand up straight with your shoulders back. We're all on this earth to suffer, so suffer like a man. I mean, in this chapter, he kind of talks about the fact that you're in life. Like, this is life, you know. Some people have grown up in better kind of situations, and some people have worse situations. But we're all here, and we all suffer, no matter what your situation is. If you've grown up in a background where your parents are rich or poor, it doesn't matter. We're all still going to suffer some way. Not everyone can be as rich and successful as me. This is one of his quotes. Everyone can be as rich and successful as me, but try to be less of a failure than you already are.
You see, I think people hear that and they take offense. This is one of the things I think makes him divisive. If somebody hears that and goes, he just called me a failure. But I think what he really is saying there is, like, if you feel like you are a failure, take responsibility for it. Not that you are a failure, but if you feel you are a failure, then what do you stand up straight with your shoulders back and kind of face on the world and see, like, kind of, like he says, just take responsibility for it. Like, this is, but actually one of the things there that he says, we're all on this earth to suffer. I'm not sure I agree with that. Are we here just to suffer? Like, that sounds something like from the Old Testament in the Bible or something, like.
He refers to the Bible a lot throughout this book. I understand what he's saying to a certain degree. Like, we are, like, suffering is kind of a choice. If you think about it, happiness is a choice. In my opinion, because, you know, some things happen to you, or some things are going to happen to you, whether you like them or not, bad or good. And you must just accept that with living through life. And you must have a bit of certain responsibility for that, because no matter what happens, you're not going to be able to dictate every event that happens in your life. And I think that's what he's kind of trying to get back. The title of the chapter, stand up straight with your shoulders back. You're going through life, so you might as well stand up straight with shoulders back. It basically to accept the terrible responsibility of life with eyes wide open is what he says.
You and I listen to podcasts for many reasons, and listening to a podcast like this probably means that you're looking to get insights about human psychology, motivation, persuasion, things like that. Well, if you're here to learn, listening is not enough. In fact, that'll get you one third of the way there. You will understand this topic. That's the first part. But secondly, you need to remember the most actionable content when you need it. It's what we call remembering it at the moment of truth. And thirdly, you'll need to find opportunities to deliberately practice this content. This episode has a suite of learning tools that you can use to help you do this. Just go to skillding.com and search for the title of this episode. Back to the show. Do you know what? It reminds me of something else, actually. I don't know if you've ever read this book, Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl.
No, I haven't, no.
Viktor Frankl was a survivor of the Holocaust in Auschwitz, and he was a psychologist, I think, or psychiatrist.
One of actually, the... never mind. Sorry, I think he actually mentions him throughout the book. Go
Does
on,
he?
Sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. So in that book, Man's Search for Meaning, Viktor Frankl talks about this idea of stimulus and response, right? So this idea that things will happen to you all the time, and like an event, right? And one of the things I remember teaching this years ago, and I used to tell people, like, imagine you're walking into a building and the person in front of you doesn't hold the door for you, like, just let it kind of swing into your face, right? That's an event. Yeah. That's something that you can't help. But now Viktor Frankl, obviously, it's a lot deeper than somebody letting the door swing in your face. Yeah. But it kind of, I think it makes the point that, like, if that's an event, right? Something that happens that you cannot stop from happening. That's just a thing that happened out in the world. But Viktor Frankl's point is that between stimulus, right, that thing happening, and your response to that thing, there's a space, there's a gap, and in that gap is where you decide to how you'll react. And I guess that's probably what Jordan Peterson is getting at here, is that there is pain is going to happen, good things and bad things are going to happen, and the thing that makes a difference is your response to it.
Exactly. Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, just having a positive attitude may actually influence other people to have a positive attitude. And yeah, I suppose we're all on this earth together, Kevin, so we might as well.
Yeah, it was like that when we got here. That's what I always think. I always say to people, I say it sometimes, like, yeah, none of us invented money, none of us invented politics, or it was like that when we got here. And you just kind of have to learn the rules and do your best with it. So stand up straight with your shoulders back.
Yeah, he has a nice little quote in there. I might read it out if you don't mind.
Yeah, go for it.
So attend carefully to your posture. Quit drooping, and hunching around. Speak your mind, put your desires forward as if you had a right to them, at least the same rights to others. Walk tall and gaze forthingly ahead, dare to be dangerous. I mean, you know, go for your dreams, I suppose, as well as that. Do you know what I mean? You've only a little fraction of time on this planet, so you might as well go for it, like, and stand up straight with your shoulders back.
Excellent. Rule two, give it to me.
Rule two, treat yourself like someone you are responsible for helping. So he says, stop waiting for other people to dig you out of your pit hole. Take your medicine. Throughout this chapter, he talks about the fact that we're very good at giving our pets medicine, and we actually don't take our own medicine. And I can actually, from experience, know this. I mean, there's many countless times I've been on antibiotics, and I actually don't finish the course of them.
Yeah.
What he's really trying to get at is, in, like, you know, fix yourself. Do you know what I mean? What would make you happy? Don't actually go for that. Sometimes, like, oh, I can refer to this in my own personal life, when a few of my friends are like, oh, come for a drink on a Saturday night. But I know really in the back of my head, I should go to the gym on Sunday morning. I know what in the long course is the best thing to do. We don't necessarily always choose the right thing to do. But I mean, if you kind of try and help yourself, you improve. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to get at?
I do. I understand. I think there's a one of the ancient philosophers used to talk about living a considered life. So rather than just kind of going from one pleasure to the next, like you're saying, the immediate pleasure is going for pints or, you know, having a takeaway or something. But the long term pleasure is feeling fit and getting a good night's sleep and all those kinds of things.
Exactly.
Like that.
Yeah.
You don't like, one of the things I often say is that you don't want an easy life. What you really want to do is have the toolkit to deal with struggle. Like, you almost you want to seek out difficult things, because solving those kinds of problems is what's that's where the real happiness comes from. And do you know this idea that there is no road to happiness, the road is happiness. Have you ever heard that before? The hard work is the reward. It's actually like just what you're saying about going to the gym. Like, the amount of times I've sat here going, I don't want to do it. I just thought, I can't. But as soon as you start to go, what was I waiting for? Like, why? As soon as you start lifting weights or going for a run or doing whatever your thing is, I'm never sorry. Like, I've never come back from a walk and go, oh, God, I'm so sorry I did that. Like, you know,
that's kind of
seek out that struggle.
Exactly. And to be honest, like, whenever you go through times of struggle, or you know you have like a long day at work, or you've deadlines to hit, once you do them and you know that you've taken responsibility for it, you feel a lot better, and then you can enjoy your time. But I mean, you need that struggle in your life, and I think that's the point he's really trying to hit home here.
Yeah.
He says to treat yourself as if you were someone you are responsible for helping is instead to consider what would be truly good for you. This is not what you want. It is also not what would make you happy. You know, that's basically it. You know, there's not much more to that point than that. We all know what we should do, but we don't always necessarily do that.
Yeah, do the things that you need to do to help yourself, like eating well, sleep well, do work that's fulfilling, surround yourself with good people. Oh, I think all those things are, like you said at the very start, that you know these things, but when you actually break it down and it becomes a rule for your life, it becomes a lot easier to kind of consider it and go, am I doing what I should do to help myself? Like, am I actually keep myself physically healthy and, you know, mentally healthy as well? So,
yeah, that's a big part of it as well. Sorry. Like, your physical health, like your sleep, you know, going to the gym, keeping fit, it does really tie into your mental health as well.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Take your medicine, as Jordan Peterson says.
Yeah.
Anyways, the third rule.
Yeah.
Make friends with people who want the best for you. And to be honest, Kevin, I've been actually blessed with the people that have been around me. You know, I've been friends with my group since I went to school. I've got a great girlfriend, so I'm blessed in this department. But especially now, you want people that want the best for you, but necessarily that will tell you the truth as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, if you did something wrong, you don't want people to, you know, not say anything. You almost want people to criticize you and try and make you do better.
So, hold you up to higher standards is what you want.
Exactly. And, you know, I want to improve. I want my friends to improve, and I would like them to want that for me as well. Do you know what I mean? So if I, you know, they say you're the product of the five people you spend the most time with.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think this ties in. I spend a lot of time with my grandfather as well. You need to be listening to people as well that or surround yourself with people that have experienced life as well. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
That sort of, you need, like, if he goes on throughout the rules, I'll get to him, like, really listening and surround yourself with people that want the best for you. I mean, it's not a hard rule to follow. I mean, you probably have experiences yourself.
Well, do you know, it's interesting that that idea of being the average of the five people you spend the most time with, it's obviously very difficult to prove that mathematically or, you know, in any way at all, but it's a good rule of thumb, I think, to think about, well, who do I hang out with? Do I hang out with people who just want to go to the pub all the time, or, you know, just bitch and moan about their work all the time, or are you working, are you surrounding yourself with people who are, like he says, you know, who are the winners, like who actually want to win and want other people to win. And just to divide our audience even more, Joe Rogan is somebody I listen to a lot. And what I think is interesting about him, he often, for those who don't know, I'm sure everyone knows who Joe Rogan is, but just in case you don't, he is a stand-up comedian, biggest podcast in the world, and he's also a UFC commentator. And when he started into comedy, like doing stand-up comedy 30 years ago, he used to talk about how he was always jealous of other comedians, like, because they'd get the sitcom or they'd get the production deal with, or development deal, they call it, with like some Hollywood studio, and he'd be complaining and giving out, like, and saying, I should have got that. And then he suddenly realized, I got into comedy because I like comedy. Why do I want there to be less good comedians? Like, I want there to be more good. And it's like, once that switch kind of flicked in his head, he kind of thought, well, I should be building these people up rather than trying to tear them down. Like, there's actually, where did I read this before about two types of people in your life? The people who either will make themselves feel better by tearing you down, or they'll make themselves feel better by building you up. And it's a very kind of black and white, again, very simplified version of it. Kind of turns people into cartoon characters, like kind of goodies and baddies or something. But there's something in that about thinking about the people you're surrounding yourself with and are they building you up or are they tearing you down? And that's just to finish the point about Joe Rogan, is that he, when he started his podcast, then he brings people on all the time and gets them to say the name of their website, say the name of your stand-up special, say, like, promote the hell out of yourself while you're here. Like, and I think that's great, like, that he kind of gives a platform to people, like, who are on their way up, you know?
Yeah, and the fact that he realizes that as well, that he has such a big platform, and that fact, like, I could imagine just being a small comedian coming on Joe Rogan's show, it's a great opportunity for him, and the fact that he realizes that, that's a testament to the person that he is. You know, I'm a great fan of Joe Rogan as well. You know, people are trying to cancel him these days. I mean, you know, if I could imagine how, like, you can criticize anyone for the amount of time he's spoken publicly on podcasts. Do you know what
he's
I mean?
He's bound to say something off. Yeah,
exactly. Do you know what I mean? If there was a microphone under my mouth for that amount of time, I'd probably be in the same situation. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So God knows what you'd say. Like, so he's doing like 3-hour episodes, like twice a day or something, and he's drinking whiskey and. You know,
and he probably forgets that he's you know, and but yeah, so he's someone I'd probably look up to as well, and he's another person that probably influenced my life. He has Jordan Peterson on quite a bit as well. They've got a good relationship. But yeah, make friends with people who want the best for you.
Excellent. I think I'd agree with that one. So number four, then. It's number four.
Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, not to who someone else is today. Especially, Kevin, you know, in this time of social media and everyone's like sharing highlights of their personal lives, and they're only showing you clips of when they're on holidays, you know what I mean, or going to a concert or festival. You don't really understand what's really going through someone's life. You know, comparing is one of the worst things you can do as a human being, is look at your neighbor and see the car you're driving and think, oh, I wish I was more like him. And this kind of comes back into the point, you know, of treat yourself like you are a responsible friend. All these kind of rules are tied together, I think.
This is exactly my point. They all wash over each other in the real world. And when we're teaching them, we break them down into individual rules. Mm. One of the things you said there about comparison, there's a great quote again. I can never remember who the quotes are from, but comparison is the theft of joy. That, you know, if you compare yourself, you're just going to, there's no point. Because, and like, do you know what actually it reminds me of? I have three kids. My oldest is, she's 8. And she loves gymnastics, and she's quite good at, like, she's quite bendy and, you know, can't quite do a backflip yet, but she's getting there. And so the last few weeks I've dropped her to gymnastics training. She's kind of mentioned a couple of other girls who can do these things that she can't do yet, like you know, handsprings, and I don't even know the name of the things, but I said exactly this to her. I said, you cannot compare yourself to those other girls. You compare yourself to how you were last week. And she's kind of looking at me like, what? About you last week. Think about not being able to land a handspring or not being able to land a whatever, right? And I say, all you have to do this week is be a tiny bit better than you were last week. And then last week, so I've said this for over the last probably 5 or 6 weeks. I just kind of, because she started talking to me about it. And I was kind of saying, look, you don't compare yourself to others. Compare yourself to you. And the last week she came out and she said, Dad, I landed a handspring. I was like, yes, you did. Yeah, get in there. I couldn't care less about her landing a handspring. What I care about is that she understands the point that there's always someone better. There's always someone worse. There's always someone similar, whatever. And like you said, comparing your car to the neighbor's car, who cares? Like, you're only ever in a race against yourself or in competition
it's
against yourself.
It's you versus you at the end of the day.
Yeah. So it's a great rule. I like that one.
And especially, like, I don't know if you're on Instagram, but you see people like posting things and, oh, I want to be like him. But, like, you're not. At the end of the day, you're not. So, you know, compare yourself to who you were yesterday and try and be better than you were yesterday.
And even if you, let's say there was somebody on Instagram who said, you know, like, you know, ripped or whatever, you know, and let's imagine you actually got to that point where you looked identical to him. You'll just find somebody else.
Exactly. You're going to compare yourself to someone else then.
To the next guy, There's always
you're chasing
more,
your tail, really.
Yeah, exactly.
So just don't do it. Compare yourself to who you were yesterday, because at the end of the day, that's all you can do.
Exactly. All right, then. What are we on now? Fifth rule?
Fifth rule. Do not let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. Now, to be honest, Kevin, I don't have children. Someday I would love to have children of my own, I suppose, and have a nice family. So maybe you can tell me what you think of this rule. There's a quote here. Do you want me to read it out? As a parent, you need to understand your own capacity for bad behaviors. Try to show your child to the world in approximately sized doses. It is the primary duty of parents to make their children socially desirable.
Yeah, it's that is the absolute crux of parenting. Like, you know, when you have, you don't know, but when you have a newborn baby, so I've been through it three times now with newborn babies, and they're magical little things, like gorgeous little lumps of deliciousness, right? They're lovely. But then you always kind of think that it's really intense parenting right at that stage, because like when they're brand new, like as in a couple of weeks old, you're up every 3 or 4 hours feeding them, changing them, sometimes just won't settle, like, you know, and it's just you're exhausted and all that, and you're all the time sterilizing bottles and blah blah blah. Like, loads of people have been through it, right? So it's not news to anyone who has kids. But what I think is really interesting is that when you're at that stage with kids, you think that's really difficult parenting. But then when the kids start getting into school they're trying to figure out the social dynamics of how to make friends and why is she not talking to me, and like, and then you realize that all the other kids are going through the same thing. The kids aren't mean, bad, they're oblivious. None of them know the rules. Yeah. They're like a blank slate. So I think that's when parenting gets really intricate, or something, like where you have to, like I was saying about explaining to my daughter, you compare yourself to yourself, not to anyone else. Well, I'm gonna have to teach her that probably for 10 years before it really sinks in properly, like, so. And then, like, say my other two kids they're completely different personalities than the older ones, so you're trying to manage everyone in a different way. So that is your job, is to make them socially desirable, is to make sure that they're not assholes, basically. Nobody wants to hang out with an asshole, like, so you want to make sure that they're nice, considerate, compassionate people. I can crack a joke. That's what I always think, you know.
Exactly. But you have to ask yourself a question as a parent: what kind of leadership style are you going to impose? Like, I know, for example, like, there's a lot of authoritarian,
authoritarian, there you go.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, style of parenting might make them overthinkers, or the open-minded sort of parent might make them, do you know, how do you find the balance as being a parent is what's something.
You do it day by day. Like, you do it incident by incident, essentially. Like, you when you spot something, have a quiet word, like that. And do you know what, actually, we should probably be relating some of this stuff back to the working world, but it's the same thing when you're trying to build leaders in a company. I often think of it in terms of parenting, and it can sound a bit patronizing, because, you know, the people who are reporting to you are not kids, right? They're adults. But it's the same kind of relationship building you're trying to do. And a company I used to work for, my manager, I remember him saying to me, it always stuck with me, he said, you should be a good citizen. That's what he wants for his team, is that everyone in the company should be a good citizen of the company. So doing things that are like doing the right things morally, even when somebody isn't there to watch it. And that's what you're trying to do, like when you're building a team, when you're building a family, you want them to be a good citizen. Like, say my kids, I want them to be good citizens of the world in as many ways as possible. When you're actually building teams in organizations, it's the same thing. You want them to be good citizens of the company, like that you are doing the right thing, that you're a team player, that you're empathetic, that you're sympathetic as well to other people, that you're
and you carry out your due diligence. Sorry.
Yeah, you do all those things that you need to do to make sure that you're creating people that are going to do the right thing when nobody is watching. I think that's what I would take from that one. It's he's right that you don't let your children do anything that makes you dislike them. But it's the same thing in a company. I think that you should. There's an idea, like, or a rule in companies that you could have, say, a team of 10 people, and one of them is just an absolute rock star, like, just, you know, say a coder or something, or they do so, or salesperson, but they're an absolute asshole. You have to get rid of that person. You cannot have having a brilliant asshole is going to destroy the rest of the team. That one person might be bringing in 80% of the revenue through their sales, but the other 9 people on the team are just completely demotivated and disjointed, and they don't like the guy. You like, have to get rid of that guy because
it can be a toxic atmosphere at the end of the day.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what you want to do for your child. You want to bring him up, you know, in approximately sized doses. I mean, feed them in bit by bit to the world, I suppose. And through that, they learn through their own experiences. You know what I mean? Anyways, rule 6.
Go on. Yeah.
Set your house in perfect order before you criticize the world. So, I mean, we're all, it's especially with this cancel culture now, it's easy to take out aim at someone that's in the public spotlight and say, oh, look at him. Do you know what I mean? Or he's done that, or he's done something. Like, you know, make sure your house is in order, basically. You know, we all have stuff to do. We've all got to get our shit together. Excuse my language.
Is this the part in the book where he talks about people tidying the room? All these people are like social justice warriors, and he said, tidy your room first. Get your shit together before you start telling other people how to rule the world.
Make your bed. Yeah. Make your bed, for instance.
Yeah.
And bit by bit. But I mean, you know, we've all got stuff to do. Like, why put your focus on that when you could be going to the gym? You could be reading that book. You could be, there's always something you can do. Is that like, I hate when people say, oh, I'm bored. Why are you bored?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Why are you bored?
My 3-year-old tells me first thing in the morning that he's bored. He wakes up and says, I'm bored.
Yeah.
To work on that. You can't help there. Jordan Peterson can't help there. He doesn't even know
the word.
But I know. Yeah, it's a good point, right? So our most recent podcast, it's on a book by a woman called Kim Scott, who is a.
Yeah, I actually listened to this morning.
Oh, did you? Yeah, Just Work.
Just Work. Yeah.
She talks a lot about the this idea of like you said, canceling people because. If you try and take the moral high ground and kind of decree from above that all of these people are worthless and they're all a piece of shit because they've made this mistake, no one's going to listen to you. You cannot take the moral high ground and try and get somebody cancelled because it's a vicious circle that's going to come back and bite you in the arse, basically. That, you know, you can't be... well, it's actually in the Bible, isn't it? About that he is without sin, cast the first stone, or something like that. Like, you know, you can't. Everyone, like, do you know what? Actually, I don't know if it was in Just Work or some other book I read, but they were talking about like when is enough enough. Like, let's say somebody says something off color or says something that they like 10 years ago that they really regret now.
Yeah.
When, what kind of apology is enough for them to be allowed to re-enter into society or to re-enter into their job or their career? If somebody kills somebody, if somebody murders somebody and they do 30 years in jail for it, they're welcome back into society as a reformed character. But when somebody sends a tweet 10 years ago that was like, you know, homophobic or, you know,
or racist, or...
yeah, whatever, yeah, that they're kind of they're people try and cancel them and try and get them cancelled from every single bit of work that they have, and there's no roll back for those people, it seems sometimes. So
yeah, especially they're trying to, I don't know if you're familiar with Dave Chappelle, they're trying to cancel him not too long ago, and he was talking about his transgender friend, and it was actually his really good friend that he was, you know, the episode was about. And I mean, like, there's no real fine line now. You don't know what to say to people or how they can be offended. But that's a different situation altogether.
I think people will call that a bad faith conversation where you're assuming I'm racist or sexist or homophobic or whatever the thing is.
Yeah.
Rather than giving me the benefit of the doubt, you're looking for that green light to be offended. You're looking for the green light to attack. And that's a bad faith conversation. Is that like you want to make sure that in 99% of cases, you want to give people the benefit of the doubt that they're trying to make a reasonable point, or they're trying to be a good person. And so I think that's a good rule. Get your house in order before you criticize the world.
There's a nice little quote from here, if you don't mind. I really love.
Yeah.
Have you cleaned up your life? If the answer is no, here's something to try. Start to stop doing what you know to be wrong. Start stopping today. Don't waste time questioning how you know that what you're doing is wrong if you are certain that it is. So basically, there's like we can all improve our life. We all know that, you know, there's not one person that's doing is 100% in all areas, but we can always make that effort to improve. And I think that's what he's trying to hit home there. Like, you know, sometimes stop talking and just act. Because we can or all stop, clean up our life.
Or stop talking and listen maybe instead of telling.
That's another point. Yeah, I'll get on to in a sec. So the seventh rule is pursue what is meaningful, not what is expedient. I mean, I'm in a great position now, Kevin, where I'm just about to finish a master's. You know, I've gone through, what is it, like 20 years of education from primary to secondary to third level. And now I'm like tossed into the big bad world. I don't know what to do with myself. Should I go straight into a job? Should I go travel a bit? You know, I think what I really want to do is find something that I don't want to go into a career that I'm like, the same day over again, you know, or hate Monday. I want to wake up on a Monday and be like, yes, you know, I'm back to work. I want to really find what is meaningful, and it's tied to the next rule, which is be truthful. And I don't want to be living a lie and say, oh, I love my job, and secretly I hate it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's something I want to really pursue in my own life. Find what I want, like my passion, because at the end of the day, we all have to eat and we all have to secure financial means. But how do you, like, I'm asking you, how do you do that where you can pursue your passions and be like, obviously now with this podcast thing, you're trying to make financial means from it. Like, and it's something that you're obviously interested in. Like, especially now that I don't have, you know, I don't have kids, I don't have a mortgage. I have somewhat freedom where I can pick what I do in the early ages of my life. But, you know, we're going down through this route and it's kind of annoying that, like, you know, you go to college, get a job, get married, you get a house, and that's it. I don't want to go down that normal route. So I'm kind of puzzled at the moment in my life. I'm going through what they call a quarter life crisis, Kevin.
Well, I tell you what you do, Ben, is I've just lost so many things I could tell you. You're probably never going to find something that blows your mind day in, day out, right? Say even with me running tribal, right?
Yeah.
Like I said, I'm deeply passionate about this, right? I believe in what I'm doing here, and I believe in the way we're going about it. From an individual's point of view, what I do makes an impact, right? It helps individuals, right? Mm. It makes sense from a financial point of view because there's money to be made, right? So it'll keep the lights on for me and everyone who works for Tribal.
Mm.
But don't get it twisted. There are days where I cannot stand this. There are days where I think I can't fucking do this again. Like I can't, like it's the most boring donkey work I need to do to get something done. But it's like we said earlier on, you're not looking for an easy life. You're looking to find a struggle that you're willing to endure because there's a goal, but actually, even as I say that, it's not that there's an end goal, it's that the work itself is satisfying because it's going to help somebody. So I would always say, if in doubt, give. So if you're not sure what to do, find something that helps somebody else. That's the quickest route to that feeling of satisfaction that you're looking for, is to help somebody else. So if you just like, I would guess from the fact of what you've said so far, you understand that material things are grand. Like, you know, having a nice car is nice. Having a nice watch is fantastic and big telly and whatever. It's like a blip. It only lasts for a certain amount of time and it just kind of fades away. Hmm. What really lasts is there's a guy, there used to be a guy called, I think it was Becker or Decker. I think it's Becker with a B. Philosopher, and he talked about this idea of there being two selves, right? So you have your physical self and you have your conceptual self. Okay. So your physical self is you, Ben, right? And at a certain, like say my own kids already know that they will die someday, right? Which is a mad thing for them to even realize, but they do ask, when am I going to die? And it's all very matter of fact. And I said, oh, not until they're very old and whatever. But at a very young age, everyone realized that the physical self is going to perish, right? You realize that grandparents die and people die and whatever. So this guy, Becker, talked about the two selves, the physical self and the conceptual self. And the physical self is you, right? Getting, moving through your life and dying, right? That'll happen. The conceptual self, the idea of Ben Balazi, you want, there's an opportunity for you to help that concept, that concept of Ben surviving. And this guy, Becker, I'm going to call him, I'm going to stick with Becker, could be Decker.
Okay.
Becker. Yeah, we'll figure it out afterwards. He said that the way people help their conceptual self stay alive is through what they, what he calls immortality projects. So an immortality project is something that you want to put your name to that.
I think this goes through a lot with a Jewish philosophy as well. They say, plant a tree, write a book and have a son so that their conceptual lives live on.
Well, that's I'm sure this guy wasn't the first one to think of it, but the idea of this conceptual self living hopefully forever or for generations is through these immortality projects. So it could be some people do it by becoming filthy rich and putting their name on a building. Some people do it by having kids. Some people live a frustrated life because they never figure out their immortality project. There's a book that we did a podcast on called Mastery by Robert Greene, and he talks about finding
your
life's
Robert
task.
Greene.
So that book Mastery I've read probably 8 or 9 times, and he talks about so in Robert Greene talks about, it's a similar thing, this immortality project. He called it your life's task. Like, what is the purpose of your life? And he says to think about the experiences, the interests, and something else. I can't remember. It's gone out of my head. But there's three things essentially you should think about when it comes to figuring out what your life's task should be. And those things, your skills, actually, was the last thing. So your experiences, your interests, and your skills, they all add up into something unique for you. Now, at your age, right, you're at your quarter life crisis, you don't have to have that figured out yet. And you might never have it figured out, but the joy is in trying to look for it, is in living a considered life, that you're not just, like you said, you're not just getting a job. Here's what happens, right? People go to primary school, and then you go to secondary school, you do all your exams, you get a certain amount of points, right? For anyone, just lots of people listening to say outside of Ireland, we have in Ireland, we have this point system. Essentially, if you get an, you know, between 90 and 100% in an exam, you get 100 points or whatever it is. 600 points is, I think, the maximum still is, or 640 or something, whatever. 625, I think, yeah, with like some sort of something else you can do. But anyway, so say 625 is the maximum. So then college courses then are based on whatever amount of points you get in your exams. So what happens is that people go from school to secondary school to college. And then they do what you're talking about, where they go to the to go get a job based on whatever they studied, usually. And then they go into that job and they just kind of keep pursuing the next thing without ever living a considered life, without ever thinking, what am I doing this for? They get promoted and promoted and promoted again. They're getting an extra 10 grand a year, an extra 20 grand a year, an extra 50 grand a year. They're getting, earning more and more money. And they've never really stopped to consider, what is the purpose of my life? What is my immortality project? What is my life's task? Is it this? Is it just to work for a company? For some people, it is. For some people, it is just, I want to earn a living so I can, you know, live my life outside, which is perfectly fine as well. But the whole point, I think, to kind of get back to answering your question, is to live a considered life, to think about, what is it I actually want to achieve? And just keep asking that question, because you're never going to find one exact answer. Take action is what I would say. Take action, start going, make corrections as you go. One of the worst things you can do in business is not make a decision. Say we could do option A or option B, and we don't know what to do. You're better off just picking an option if you don't know what to do, and then we can just course correct if it's not working out. But if you make no decision, then you're just treading water and you're going to drown. So same in life, I think, is you know, if you don't know what to do, just do something. And if in doubt, give. If in doubt, do something that helps somebody else, because it's you're going to get that sense of satisfaction that it's like a short little burst, and that'll kind of lead you towards something then, usually, like that sense of an immortality project that actually matters. So
that's a great piece of advice, Kevin, and I think, you know, I don't want to, like, you know, be 6 years of age and be like, geez, I kind of wasted my youth trying to enhance my career when I have personal things that I want to achieve as well. You know, I want to run a marathon. I want to go climb some really cool peaks. I want to travel the world. But I want to do that whilst working on my career as well. So to find the balance is hard because, you know, I obviously have career objectives that I want to achieve, and I also have personal objectives that I want to achieve. And I'm at that stage now where I've completed my education, or I'm about to complete my education, and I don't know what path I should choose next. I feel like if I was to focus on my personal objectives in life, then it might have effects towards my career objectives in my life.
It won't. I'm telling you, well, because you're only ever in competition with yourself. There's people like who switch industries when they're 45 years old. Like, they go from working in one industry to a completely different industry.
Yeah.
And the only skills that really, the most transferable skills is what we're teaching here. These life skills or behavioral skills. The other stuff you can learn within reason. Like, you're probably not going to, you know, become a surgeon at 45. You could, right? But you'd have to do it for 10 years, right? But, like, most of the jobs that are out there, generally what you want to
learn,
generally what you want to do is you want to solve interesting problems with good people. That's ultimately what you want to do. And you can kind of slot in different jobs then. Like, I got jobs before where didn't know much about the industry, but because I was a good project manager, you can just figure it out, like, because I don't need to know everything. I was good at managing people. I was good at kind of talking to people or kind of building relationships with people and getting to know people. And, well, what do you need from me to help you do your job? And I can see if I can do that for you. Like, they're the kind of skills you need, and you can learn them traveling the world. You can learn them exactly working in a bar. So,
and that's another thing. Robert Greene, the author you touched on from Mastery, he said that before, that he had something like 60 jobs before he was a certain age, before he was like 30, like 60 different jobs. And from that, he learned so much about people. The book, 48 Laws of Power as well, he wrote that. That's a great book. I don't know if you've read it before. But, you know, he's a very interesting character and, you know, a guy that you could take a lot of advice from.
All right, then. So that was Pursue What's Meaningful. Is that right?
Not number seven. Yeah. Pursue What is Meaningful. I'll just read a quote here if you don't mind. To have meaning in your life is better than to have what you want, because you may neither know what you want nor what you truly need. Meaning is something that comes upon you of its own accord. You can set up the preconditions. You can follow meaning when it manifests itself, but you cannot simply produce it all as an act of will.
Yeah.
So basically what we talked about there, you know, sometimes what is meaningful is actually that struggle in life, you know, and you need that struggle to find meaning.
What I would say to you and you know, anyone your age, is that, just to reiterate the point, that no matter what job you're in, at least 10% of it is going to do your head in. No matter what, there'll be boring days or things or you're like, I can't face this again. Like, but you have to kind of think about the bigger picture, maybe, or, you know, is this going to help other people get what they want so that I can get what I want? That kind of thing. So anyway, on to the next one.
Okay. On to the next one. Number eight. And this kind of ties in with number seven for me anyways. Tell the truth or don't at least lie. You corrupt your own perceptions if you lie. Tell your own truth. So, as I said there previously, if I'm 6 years of age and I realize that I didn't fulfill my own potential when I was 24 years of age, you know, I don't think I would have lived a meaningful life. So I want to choose a career path that I find meaning. And I think there's a lot of people, there's a quote, a lot of men live quiet lives of desperation.
Yeah.
You know, they get to a certain point and they're like, you know, I could have been that or I could have been that. I'm at a great position now that I know that, you know, I have a choice and I can make a choice and I want to be true to myself. You know what I mean?
At least you have that awareness. A lot of people, when I was your age, how old are you?
24. 24.
When I was 24, I was oblivious to the world, to what was, to, I don't think I even asked myself those questions about what should I do? Should I go traveling? I just got a job and just kind of started working. And so I think you're already ahead of the game by asking yourself that question, like, what do I actually want to do? So, yeah.
But it's the social norms, Kevin, especially in Ireland, where it's literally go to school, go to college, get a job, or if you go do a trade, go straight into work. And like, we have this kind of thing in Ireland where it's just work 5 days a week and then live for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And something I don't want to do, to be honest. Yeah. I want to live for every day. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to think about 3 days a week or 2 days a week. I want to live 7 days a week. And that's something that I'm going to try and pursue. And that comes from finding, like, you know, like doing a job, you're going to be working 40, 50, maybe even 60 hours a week. I want, like, that's a long time. I want to actually enjoy that time. Do you know what I mean?
And yeah.
That's a trouble in its own, trying to find that.
You know? Live a considered life, Ben. Just keep asking yourself that question. And rather than being frustrated by not knowing, enjoy the process because...
Yeah.
You know, John, actually, I'm reminded of Tom Hanks. You know, the actor Tom Hanks. I remember him saying, I think it was on Graham Norton maybe or something. Just, it was a real kind of throwaway kind of comment he made. Somebody must have said something about him being like an A-list, you know, top of the pile kind of actor, like gets paid millions, whatever. Mm. And he said, it's interesting because when you're a young actor starting out, you're all the time climbing this mountain, trying to get to the top, get to the top, get to the top. He said, when you get to the top, you realize there's nothing up there. There's nothing on top of it. Like, it's just, you're still just you. Like, and so it's kind of comes back to what we said there a while ago about the struggle is where the happiness is. Like, it's the building something is what's interesting. Yeah. The destination is good, but it's not as good as the solving interesting problems with good people. That's what you want to do in any job.
And Kevin, do you think there is really a destination? Are you always going to try and, like, is that like pursuing meaningless in a whole, is always setting yourself goals, always kind of struggling and trying to get a little bit better each day? Because at the end of the day, like,
I think there are Jordan destinations. Jordan Peterson
mentions it anyways. Sorry, Kevin.
Yeah, he says,
you know, if you win the lotto and you think you're going to be having sangrias in Barbados for the rest of your life, that's a fantasy. Do you know what I mean? Sorry, I cut you off.
No, you're okay. You're right. That, yeah, the destination should be celebrated. Like, there should be milestones, I think, that you celebrate. But you know what I'm reminded of is Alex Ferguson. Mm. Anytime they ever won, so those who don't know, Alex Ferguson, he used to be the Manchester United manager for like 26 years or something. But what was really interesting about him is that anytime they won a trophy, and they won loads of trophies, he'd be on the pitch celebrating, but you'd almost see him leaving the pitch. He's already starting to scheme for next season. Starting to think about the next bit. Like, so I think you can almost, should you have a destination? Yeah, you should. You should have things that you're aiming for. And when you reach them, or do you know what you should do? When you're close to reaching them, you should start to let them move out a little bit more away from you. Let's say one of my goals for Tribal was to get 1,000 downloads. Right? I wanted 1,000 people to listen to our
your first milestone. Yeah.
But as I could see it coming, right? So when we were like getting to 800 and 850 and 900, I could see it coming. In my head, I started thinking, I want 10,000.
But even
when we got to 1,000, I still kind of allowed myself to kind of feel a little blip, that was good. That was cool. But 10,000 would be deadly. 1,000,000 would be amazing. Like, that's the kind of stage that I kind of let those goals move out naturally.
And especially, if you make 1,000,000, the next one is going to be like, you're not happy with 1,000,000. You're going to be happy.
And you know why I'm not happy? It's not about the number itself. My hope is that I'm getting better at doing podcasts. And as I'm getting better, more people are learning. So I hope I'm giving people ways to improve their own life. Mm. So when I talk about getting to 1,000 downloads and 10,000 downloads, so it's not my ego that drives that. There's 10,000 people now who hopefully have been helped in some way. That's what kind of drives me. That's my like intrinsic motivation for it.
And the fact that you're creating value for other people, even if it helps one person, you know, that's meaningful in its own self. Do you know what I mean?
Well, that's what I hope. That's what drives me, and I think that's what any success that we have had or will have in the future, I think will come from people understanding that we're doing this for the right reason, that we're here working on this this problem to be solved for the right reasons. I think so. Next one.
Rule number 9. Assume that the person you are listening to might know something you don't.
Jesus Christ, what a great rule that is. Like the amount of people who just assume they know everything about a topic. Like I read some tweet the other day saying, oh, good to see all the Brexit experts retrained as Ukraine experts overnight.
That's it. Like, that's it. Everyone.
Yeah, everyone thinks they're an expert. And you just be humble and assume you don't. Oh, pulling something out there. Can you still hear me?
Yeah, I can still hear you. You're fine. Yeah, that's something.
Pull the wire out there. Go on.
Don't worry. That's something I've truly identified as probably a weakness for me. Sometimes I just kind of keep talking. I'm like, oh, Ben, you got to shut up and actually listen, because you're like, by speaking, you're only spitting out knowledge that you know, and you're not actually attaining any information that people may know. And that's the fundamentals of human psychology as well. Like, we learn from each other. So, you know, and like, you've got two ears and one mouth, you should use them accordingly, is what they say.
You know what the great thing, a superpower in business, is to say, I don't know enough about that to have an opinion. The amount of times I've been in meetings where somebody doesn't want to come across as stupid, somebody doesn't want to come across like they didn't read the report they were supposed to read or whatever, so just try and bullshit their way through it.
Okay.
Honest to God, it's a superpower to say, actually, I don't know enough about that. Especially, say, in my role as like CEO of Tribal, but I'm actually reminded of Steve Jobs. There's a great quote from him where he said, I don't hire great people so I can tell them what to do. I hire great people so they can tell me what to do.
Yeah.
Like that's like, you're the expert. You tell me, I don't know. Like, you're the product expert or the marketing expert or whatever. Like, you tell me. Like,
especially someone like Steve Jobs saying that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's,
like, one of the most powerful men in the 21st century, or, you know, the things he's achieved at Apple, or did achieve at Apple, saying that. And that's who you should be taking inspiration from. People, like, I know it's kind of cliche, all these, oh, like, you've got to listen to people, blah, blah, blah. But it really is key. And it goes back to who the bit about who you're hanging around with, who your circle is. I said I spent a lot of time with my grandfather. Yeah, like, if you actually really talk to someone that's lived through, like, today we were talking about, I was talking to him about, like, the Ukrainian war, and then he was, like, talking to me about, like, Nagasaki and stuff like that. And if you really, like, listen, and, like, it's just interesting, like, and you learn a lot from people that have lived through life.
You know what, Ben? One of the reasons that we use books as our source material is because the books have a lifetime of knowledge in them. And what I want to do with Tribal is I want to unlock that knowledge for people. So it's like exactly the same thing as talking to your granddad. Like, it's like every book is like some granddad has written this book about everything he learned about one particular topic. And that's what I want to do, is unlock it for people. So yeah, if you sometimes people ask me, like, what do you do for a living? And I'll just say I'm a teacher, but really I'm a student. Like, I'm a student first. I think I always, that's why, like, one of my, actually, to get back to your other point about what to do with your life, I wanted to get paid to read books, essentially. That's like, I sit and read all day every day, and I still do. Gotten a bit more complex now, obviously, but that's my thing, is learning from people and assuming I don't know something. And then, as it happens, every now and again, you do know something. You go, I actually know the answer to that. Like, or, you know, I am a bit of an expert on one particular topic or two. Like, but
yeah,
it's a great rule. Just assume that the person you're listening to might know something that you don't. I think it's a great one. Yeah. Be humble.
Yeah. Be humble, especially. Yeah. That's a great one from Jordan Peterson. Yeah. You know,
Next one then.
Be precise in your speech. If there is a problem, the first step is to define it. Confront the chaos of being. Don't try to beat around the bush.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, admit what you want and tell those around you who you are, I suppose. That's what I really gather from this. I mean, like, it was kind of a complicated for one for me. Like, he did refer a lot to the Bible. I mean, the thing about this, the fact that he refers to the Bible a lot means that, like, these situations have been going since the beginning of humanity.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot, like, obviously there's been huge technological advancements in today's world, but the problems that were happening 2000 years ago seem to be the problems of today, or the situations of today, you know. Yeah. Like, really, like, finding meaningless in life, or, you know, I suppose people back in the olden days were comparing themselves. It's still the same theory, if that makes sense.
Humans are humans. Yeah, it's like, there was a great thing years ago. I remember reading, somebody had this quote about, like, kids these days don't listen to their parents. They're too cheeky. They're this, they're that. Like, and somebody said, who do you think said it? And all these people were guessing, and it turns out it was written, like, on the inside of one of the pyramids or something. Like, it was from 2000 years ago that people had said the same thing. Like, I can't remember the exact wording of it, but it was something like that. It was something that seemed very modern, like, you know, kids today are cheeky and whatever, but it was from, like, thousands of years ago.
Yeah.
So it's that's the thing, that when it comes to being precise in your speech, I think it's I think probably what he means there is don't be afraid to speak up for yourself. That's the way I would understand that. Like, is, if you're going to be precise in your speech, there's no point saying, like, say, do you know what it is? It's like, if somebody wants a pay rise or something, like, don't beat about the bush. You know, like, have you got good reasons why you should get a pay rise? Then, well, then come and talk
speak
to me.
Up.
Like, you know? Speak up for yourself. And, confront the chaos of being. Don't try to beat around the bush. Yeah, it's a bit of a complex one, that one. That's what I would take from that, is be precise in your speech, is to know your own mind almost, and understand that. Don't add to the confusion, maybe. Even in a business meeting, like, don't add to the confusion by talking just because you want to talk. It ties back to the rule before that, you know, assume that you don't know everything. Assume that other people know stuff you don't know. And don't try and bullshit your way through things that you have no business bullshitting your way through, you know?
Exactly, yeah. And that's the thing with all these rules. They all tie into each other, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Give us next one, then.
11th rule, almost done. Do not bother children when they are skateboarding. It goes back to the other rule about parenting. I mean, they say skateboarding teaches children their limits. You know, like, if you're scared of your child learning how to skateboard, he's actually going to learn, or they're going to learn so much from falling, failing from a trick, trying to do a trick, and it's a trick that, like, the more you practice, or it's a skateboarding is basically an activity that the more you do it, the better you get. And that's true, everything. The more practice you do in everything, but it's also, how do you teach kids to learn? And, you know, I remember getting punched when I was, like, 12 or 13. And now, looking back at it, it's probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me in terms of my self-development, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and obviously no parent wants their kid to get punched in the face, but, like, sometimes you gotta let just kids be and learn from their own mistakes or their own,
And, you know, and again, it's funny, it sounds like I'm patronizing people, but it's the same thing of building a team, that the podcast we did before Just Work was the 5 dysfunctions of a team, and it's about building trust and allowing people to fail. It's the exact same thing there. When your team, say, like, to kind of mangle an analogy, but when your team is learning to skateboard, let them make mistakes. Let them give them room to fail, because that's how you're gonna move your team forward, or move yourself forward. It's the same.
Sometimes the best thing for someone's development is to learn on their own. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
And let them figure it out for themselves.
Yeah.
That's a great rule, I think.
Yeah. Well, give us the last one, then.
Lastly, pet a cat when you encounter one on the street. I mean, the hustle and bustle of life, we all were going through it a million miles an hour. Like, how often do we actually just take time to just sit down and just pet a cat, or even in the street, just pet a cat and just You know, life is crazy thing, Kevin. Do you know what I mean? Like, why are we all here? We're all trying, that's basically why the book is about. And that's why I love this last rule. Pet a cat when you encounter one on the street. It's kind of just take a bit of time to appreciate the small things.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Do you remember there was a in the UK, there was a on the BBC, they had some boat they were going to, they were having a vote to see what to name the boat. Do you remember this?
And it was No, not familiar.
I can't remember. The boat was like a scientific lab that was going to, like, you know, go out into the sea and do experiments, whatever. And they had this thing on the BBC where they were going to, you know, vote the name of the boat, and Boaty Mac Boatface won. And to me, that was one of the funniest things in the world, because, like, they had all these, you know, fancy names for this boat. This thing just took off over Twitter, like, and everyone voted for Boaty Mac Boatface.
Oh, they had a public kind of vote for it.
Yeah. Okay. And to me, like, that's the same thing, is pet a cat when you encounter it. I think having a laugh, like, that kind of just innocent, taking the piss out of something and everyone being in on it together is one of the best things. I just thought that was brilliant. Boaty Mac Boatface is on that. And then they had to, it's okay, well, look, everybody, it's like kids in a class. John, you're in school. And something funny happens and you're trying not to laugh, and the teacher's like, okay, everybody, just get it out of your system.
They are
the moments in life where, like, it's the exact same thing, like, that life is hard, life is a million miles an hour, life is complex, life is sad, life is just tragedy, but there are some fucking hilarious things happen in life as well. If you just spot them, or you see them happening, like, you know, I would imagine you're at that age where you and your friends just take the piss out of each other a lot, like, and kind of wind each other up and messing with each other. All those kind of things, I think that's, you should never, ever lose that. And I think it's the same thing, is that you should take time to appreciate those little things in life. I think that's
Exactly. Yeah. And do you mind if we just end on this quote? Because I kind of like it.
Go for it.
You're in a war, not a battle. And a war is composed of many battles. You must stay functional through all of them. When worries associated with the crisis arise at other times, remind yourself that you will think them through during the scheduled period. And maybe when you're going for a walk, your head is spinning, a cat will show up, and if you pay attention to it, you will get a reminder for just 15 seconds that the wonder of being might make up for the ineradicable suffering that accompanies it. Pet a cat when you encounter one on the street.
Ben Balazzi. 12 Rules of Life by Jordan Peterson. Thanks very much for being on the podcast.
Kevin, thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, before you go, just a quick message about Skilding and what we're all about. We believe that true learning happens when you understand, remember, and deliberately practice your newly acquired knowledge. This podcast just covered the first part. You now understand the key takeaways from this book. To help you remember them, we will send you 3 interactive summaries that accompany this episode to empower you to remember the key takeaways at that moment of truth. To really embed the knowledge from this episode, you can use the dedicated and completely private digital portfolio to set a time and a date to go out into the big bad world and deliberately practice the key takeaways covered in this episode. For all this and for all of our podcast episodes, head over to skillding.com, that's skillding.com, and search for the title of this episode. Until next time.